Welcome to the completely new online therapy series, Overcoming Social Anxiety, Step by Step. This new series contains both audio and video therapy, an expanded handout book, therapy songs, extra written explanations, diagrams, and other new features that will help you make progress toward overcoming social anxiety. You have probably already listened to the audios and watched the videos about this new therapy series. If you haven't, you can do it at any time from the therapy series page of the socialanxietyinstitute.org website. I am Dr. Thomas A. Richards, psychologist and director of the Social Anxiety Institute in Phoenix. The therapy material for the series has been added to, updated, and reorganized to take advantage of the wealth of experience we've gained in treating social anxiety over the last 20 years. University research has shown repeatedly that the only way social anxiety can be eradicated is through the use of a learning therapy. Only a therapy that lets you learn new strategies and turn them into habits that change the brain and its neural circuitry has a chance to change the disorder called social anxiety. Other so-called therapies for social anxiety do not work because they do not change the neurons in the brain and do not cause new pathways and connections to grow. People like to jump at the latest therapy fad that comes along, and I receive letters each week asking me if this or that therapy will help them overcome social anxiety. The truth is that if you read the scientific literature, only social anxiety-specific cognitive behavioral therapy works. There are over 10,000 research articles in the best peer-reviewed journals that attest to this fact. No other type of therapy has been shown to change the brain, and thus people's lives, permanently. This research finding fits hand in hand with our clinical experience at the Social Anxiety Institute. Everyone that follows through with the therapy gets better. The only way you can fail is if you stop or are not diligent enough. My thoughts, feelings, and beliefs are 180 degrees different than they were 30 years ago when my life was consumed with fear and I was so depressed I was on the verge of suicide. Over time, with help, my brain changed so that I learned new ways of thinking and believing and acted on those beliefs so that I no longer felt socially anxious. I am not the only one to have overcome social anxiety. Every person that is committed to getting better and sticks with the therapy makes incremental progress and gets better until at some point all the rational things they've learned and acted on become automatic. They become habits. When you automatically act in mentally healthy ways that prevent you from being anxious, we say you have overcome social anxiety. It's something we see happen all the time at the Social Anxiety Institute. In each session, we will use solution-based cognitive behavioral therapy to change our old thoughts and feelings into rational thoughts, beliefs, and feelings. We've been running therapy groups for social anxiety for 20 years now, both for people who live locally and for people who live out of state and country. The majority of our local therapy group is composed of people who live in other states and have moved here to undergo cognitive behavioral group treatment for social anxiety. People come to our treatment groups because they can't receive appropriate therapy where they live. I enjoy getting to know each person that I work with, people of all ages and from all places, and I have learned more about social anxiety and how to treat it by working with each one of them. Each and every therapy group and each and every individual has taught me something to make our social anxiety program more personal, practical, and comprehensive. Everything we do in the upcoming therapy series is rational and will make common sense to you. There is no goofiness, affirmations, religiosity, mysticism, or philosophies in the material. I don't tell jokes or waste your time. The content of each session is straight down the board therapy that works if it is learned and applied, because you want to get over social anxiety as quickly and as effectively as possible. This entire series and the online website for registered users has been copyrighted, and as a registered user, you have access not only to the audio and video portions of the therapy, but to all the extra therapy material online, too. You'll be part of a community of people who are working together to overcome social anxiety. We have assembled a group here at the Social Anxiety Institute to help you during the entire time you're working on the therapy series. Every person working at the Social Anxiety Institute has, or has had, social anxiety themselves. Everyone will understand what you say, no matter what part of the therapy site you're in, or how far along in your recovery you are. Please go through the series sequentially, in order, as the concepts and strategies build upon each other. The program will not work if you skip around from session to session. It's a therapy program specifically designed for people with social anxiety disorder. Most of you know I suffered with social anxiety myself until I was about 40. I can't tell my full life story in this series, but when I was in my 20s, my social anxiety was strong and out of control. In those days, I was always afraid of the grocery store checkout line, because when I got ready to check out, I knew I had an audience of people standing in line behind me, watching and judging me. If I heard people talking, I suspected they were making fun of me. And if I heard laughter behind me, I jumped to the conclusion that they were probably laughing at me. I was too frozen in place to look around, so I stared straight ahead, enduring my rising anxiety and self-consciousness. If I didn't sign my check fast enough, or if I swiped my credit card the wrong way, I felt self-conscious and my anxiety grew. I felt the pressure to go faster because I was holding up the line. I was worried that they would shout out negative comments to me. The cashier would say, "Good morning," or "Did you find everything you needed today?" And I would tense up inside. My voice would grow thin and weak, and I would mumble out an answer, all the time believing that the people behind me were listening, judging, and finding fault with everything I said. Because anxiety made my voice grow thin and quiet, the clerk would usually need to repeat her question, and I would have to repeat my answer again, more embarrassed than ever now, and still aware of the people in line behind me. I felt pressured because I imagined them to be frustrated and impatient with me because I was so slow and took up so much of their time. At work parties that I had to attend, I quickly found the darkest and most inconspicuous corner of the room to hide in, and tried to look invisible so I wouldn't be forced to talk to anyone. I was afraid to talk to other people because I expected them not to like me. I was hesitant, awkward, and shy in their presence. In classrooms, I was afraid of the instructor and afraid the instructor would ask me a question. So I slouched in my seat and propped my face up with my hands as a way to defend myself against the anxiety I felt. I always sat at the back of the room, in the last row, and as close to the exit as I could get. I agonized over talking to other people. Did I say the right thing, or did what I say sound stupid? I would replay the scene over and over again in my mind for hours. As a senior in college, a speech class was required, and that semester was a living hell, as I had enormous anticipatory anxiety about walking up to the podium, opening my mouth, and hoping I would be able to say something. My voice would grow weak, thin, and wobbly, and I was sure the audience could tell I was scared. My fear was intense during these speeches, so that, after it was finally over, I was disoriented, lightheaded, and had little recollection of what I said. When I was anxious, my mind wouldn't focus well, and when the situation was over, I rehashed the things I had done wrong over and over again in my mind. I focused on all the embarrassing mistakes that made me feel ashamed. I beat myself up for saying the wrong things or mumbling too much, not making enough eye contact, or for not knowing what to say. My brain focused on all my failures, what I thought was wrong with me, and I constantly blamed myself for the anxiety I felt. As I grew into my 30s, anxiety and the related feelings of depression, self-consciousness, inferiority, and lack of confidence loomed ever larger. I began to feel my life was over. I was a hopeless mess, and I was helpless to do anything about it. I tried to find help over and over again. My whole life was a testament to finding an answer to this horrible problem I lived with. But I couldn't find any help, no matter how much I tried. No one was there with an answer, and I had no one to talk to about it. I felt I was the only one in the whole world with this problem. I never read, heard, or saw anyone else talk about the problems I lived with. There was no name for it and no information about what was wrong with me. This is just a glimpse of what social anxiety did to me in my 20s and 30s. To say social anxiety is an emotional nightmare is to underestimate its vast, thoroughly entrenched grasp into every area of life. Social anxiety trapped me completely, and the harder I fought against it, the worse it grew. I'll add my personal story in the sessions where it's applicable to help you understand anti-anxiety strategies and methods. But for now, let's move on and look at the definition of social anxiety disorder. We'll look at the major symptoms that are shared by almost everyone with this disorder, and the related symptoms that a minority of people with social anxiety possess. In addition to our automatic negative thoughts and beliefs, we'll also talk about what social anxiety does to us physiologically. If you experience self-consciousness when you're the center of attention, or feel like you're on display, if you hate it when you're called on or put on the spot, if you feel like you're being judged in a negative way when people watch you or observe what you're doing, if you dislike going around the room and introducing yourself, if you dislike speaking in front of people and to other people, if you hate to keep conversations going, if you get self-conscious when you're out in public, or have anticipatory anxiety over future events, if you feel inhibited in social situations, even when you want to do or say something, if you don't know what to say in a social situation and feel anxious because of it, and if you avoid social events because it causes you heightened anxiety, then it's likely you suffer from social anxiety. Physical symptoms that accompany these fears include the heart beating rapidly, blushing, excessive sweating, and tightening of the muscles around the face and neck. Other symptoms include facial freezing, the inability to smile, and breathing difficulties. Eye contact problems or irrational beliefs concerning the eyes are also common symptoms. Additional physical symptoms include shaking or trembling hands when writing a check or signing your name, gastrointestinal problems, swallowing problems, and numbing out, sometimes called zoning out or checking out, when the anxiety level becomes too intense to handle. Other overt symptoms include the inability to freely make or take telephone calls, eating or drinking in public, anxiety about using public restrooms, waiting in lines, and being in crowded environments. Some people develop dysmorphias along with social anxiety, which are very strong, irrational beliefs about the way they look. People with dysmorphias think their physical presence makes everyone else uncomfortable. The strongest, most pervasive symptom of social anxiety is the constant, intense fear that will not go away when you feel put on the spot. The level of anxiety experienced stays high and does not go down until you can escape the situation. In a classroom with an instructor who called on students all period long, I could never let my guard down. I had high amounts of anxiety when the class started, and I had high amounts of anxiety when it ended. After class, thinking about coming to class the next day made me fearful and anxious. High, sharp, and intense amounts of anxiety in anxiety-triggering situations that do not go away with time is the hallmark feature of social anxiety. Social anxiety is not a yes, no, either you have it or you don't disorder. Anxiety is not a binary condition. It exists along a continuum from a low amount to a high amount, depending on the situation and who is involved. Every anxiety-triggering event is responded to differently, and people fall along the anxiety continuum according to how much anxiety they have about the particular situation at hand. For example, some people feel anxious when walking through a shopping mall alone, whereas others feel relatively little anxiety when doing this. They may feel more anxiety when they have to introduce themselves in a meeting at work, whereas another person may not find making introductions at work too anxiety-causing at all. The symptoms of social anxiety are the same, but each individual has a different level of anxiety concerning particular situations and events. It all depends on who and what is involved in the situation. Social anxiety interferes with normal life and restricts people from living the way they want. Social anxiety holds us back and our fears prevent us from engaging fully in life. It causes distress occupationally, socially, and financially, and makes it more difficult to establish relationships of all kinds with all people. Social anxiety, anxiety about social events, clouds every aspect of our lives and damages our ability to move forward. Since social anxiety itself causes all these problems, our main therapy goal is to gradually and permanently reduce anxiety. The big problem in our lives is anxiety. Typically, other psychological problems, like depression, frustration, and low self-esteem, are caused by social anxiety. Anxiety is the culprit in all problem situations in life for us. Once social anxiety is gone, then the related negative emotions, like depression, go along with it. That is, as your anxiety decreases, so will your depression and frustration. All the other negative feelings and emotions are caused by social anxiety and will go away as social anxiety goes away. Getting better and overcoming social anxiety is the only solution to all these life-restricting problems. You can get over social anxiety by learning the cognitive strategies provided to you in this series and putting them into place in your life. As you do this, you have already begun the process of getting better. People who don't have social anxiety never understand how deep and entrenched our feelings of anxiety really are. They never understand that we experience these feelings of anxiety almost every day of our lives, and much more than one time a day. Social anxiety invades every facet of our lives. Other people experience nervousness and anxiety at times, but they don't experience the depth of anxiety like we do. They never live through the level of fear and anxiety that we live through every day of our lives. What they call anxiety is more like a little nervousness. It's not a big deal and is relatively short and momentary. Social anxiety disorder, on the other hand, is deep-seated, invasive, and entrenched. It is always there, in the forefront of our lives, ready to come out at any time. Social anxiety takes over every aspect and every situation in our lives. Ironically, it was only after I was better that I found a name for what I had been suffering from all my life. The name of this newly discovered disorder was finally in the research journals, and a book had just been published about it. If this problem, initially called social phobia, had only been discovered 25 years earlier, it would have changed my life completely. But none of us can turn back time. All we can do is make the best of the situation we are now in. Instead of moaning about all the years I lost because of social anxiety, it's better for me to focus on getting better right now and to do the proactive things I can do this very moment to make sure that tomorrow is anxiety-free. I want to live in the present moment and enjoy it. There's no need to rehash and relive the past. The past is over and done with. It's not coming back, no matter how much we think or ruminate about it. Your past no longer defines you, unless you let it define you. And we don't want that to happen. We will learn strategies methods, and concepts that will help us reduce our anxiety so that we can live in the present moment and be happy. As you can tell, my interest in helping people with social anxiety comes quite naturally because I lived with it for so many years myself. Later in life, when I became a psychologist, I was able to focus my practice on social anxiety disorder fairly quickly. It was easy for me to understand what my patients had lived through, just like it was easy for them to understand my examples. When I presented them with cognitive solutions, it didn't take long for them to understand the rationale behind them and how these strategies would help them solve feelings of social anxiety. Now, let's look briefly at the numbers. Social anxiety has been a long-neglected mental disorder. The latest government epidemiological data show that about 7% of the population at any given time suffers from it. A large percentage of these people do not know what is disrupting their lives and therefore never seek treatment for it. Many people think they're just shy, although a more complete description would include words like inhibited, backwards, quiet, depressed, and introverted. Many people think the solution is to avoid life, and they live out their entire life shut away from the rest of the world, having limited or no relationships with other people. Many others have sought adequate treatment, but never received it, because the therapist they went to see didn't know what to do to help them. Many others have sought adequate treatment, but never received it, because the therapist they went to didn't know what to do with them or how to help them, so they spent their sessions talking about their childhood and their current lives. This kind of therapy does not work for social anxiety, and no solutions ever come out of it. Social anxiety is a major problem at all ages. Social anxiety itself, although it can usually be traced back to childhood, typically hits hard in the mid to late teenage years. For many people, extended periods of criticism, teasing, bullying, and perceived failures lead to the point where the brain can't handle all the negativity and pain any longer. There are usually seeds or germs in childhood that grow and develop into full-blown social anxiety. There are exceptions to this rule, however, as social anxiety can occur at any point in the human lifespan. Why does it occur? No one has the complete answer to this question, and scientists are a long way from finding out all the factors involved and how they interact with other factors in complex ways to contribute to the development of social anxiety. We know there's a general predisposition to anxiety that is hereditary, but the role of the environment appears to be stronger in causing and maintaining social anxiety. The interaction of the environment with genetics is the largest contributing factor to the development of social anxiety. Many people with social anxiety come from backgrounds that involve a series of negative life events or constant criticism from an important adult in their life, whereas other people come from loving families who are concerned about their well-being and offer full support. You cannot necessarily blame faulty parenting for social anxiety. No one knows the causation, and this is a highly complex subject. Each person's case is different. Hundreds of factors correlate and intermingle with each other. It would not be accurate to make a blanket statement concerning what causes social anxiety. One of my social anxiety patients was teased and harassed by his junior high school classmates until the end of his high school years. He was called names and was repeatedly made fun of because he was intelligent, he wore glasses, and was shy. He could not respond to the teasing when it was occurring, and this just intensified the bullying and taunts from the others, causing him more emotional trauma. He buried all this criticism and bullying inside his head, which made him feel more inhibited, avoidant, and distrustful of others. After several years of constant negative feedback, he began to believe what he was being told. Once he started believing these irrational things coming from the people who bullied him, a full-blown case of social anxiety was set in motion. Words are powerful instruments, and they can do great harm to people. The old adage, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names can never hurt me," is completely untrue. Name-calling, teasing, and bullying cause great psychological damage that some people carry to their grave. Some adults with social anxiety grew up in households where they were beaten down in one form or another. This was my own experience. Other households are controlled by one of the parents in an authoritarian way, and they squelch the spirit out of the child. These negative family dynamics create a fertile breeding ground for the development of social anxiety. However, in many other instances, children grow up in a loving family atmosphere and have parents who are kind and supportive. Sometimes the beginnings of social anxiety can be traced to school or kids around the neighborhood, and feeling shy and inhibited makes a child feel alone and left out. All of these may be factors that contribute to social anxiety. In recent years, we have seen young people who are enabled by their parents and expected to do nothing because of their fears. These people did not take part in any social activities whatsoever. Knowing that their child is afraid of other people, the parents allowed him to avoid almost all social circumstances, including childhood activities, playing with other children, and attending school. These kids were not taught how to grow up, to take on responsibilities, or encouraged to be independent. They were enabled to avoid everything social in life, and it becomes more difficult at later ages for them to change. Change is still possible with a comprehensive therapy like this, but missing out on all the normal social activities of childhood makes it more difficult for the individual, and it takes a longer period of time to overcome social anxiety. No one can predict with accuracy why some people develop social anxiety and some do not. It's a vastly complex subject. Luckily, we don't need to know why we developed it to be able to get over it. Our concern is learning how to overcome it. If you and I spent an hour a week in therapy, rehashing all our anxieties, fears, and related circumstances from the past, we would simply be reinforcing our anxiety, fear, and depression. By dwelling on our problems and analyzing them to death, we would constantly remind ourselves about our problems and make them even worse. So instead of trying to figure out every little last detail of why we develop social anxiety, we should deliberately focus on how to get out of the anxiety trap we're in. We want a solution to the problem, not an explanation of the past. I tried the analyzing routine myself for 20 years. I reasoned that if I could figure out what caused my social anxiety, then I'd be able to fix it. I was very analytical. I overthought everything. And after years of rehashing the past and thinking over all the depressing things that happened to me, I did figure out pretty well what had caused my social anxiety. But it did no good. I was still stuck because I had no idea how to get better and overcome it. All those years of analyzing just made me more depressed. And knowing what I knew just made my social anxiety worse. If we focus on how and why we develop social anxiety and analyze our problems incessantly, we'll be stuck at this point forever. But if we focus on strategies and methods to get better, we gradually and successfully free ourselves from the vicious cycle that holds us back. The focus in comprehensive cognitive behavioral therapy is on the present day, finding solutions to our social anxiety so that we can live the kind of lives we want to live. If we think of anxiety existing along a continuum, then people who are extremely inhibited and isolate themselves from others because of anxiety tend to have few friendships and relationships of any kind. Many people that fall on the avoidant end of the continuum have jobs well beneath their capabilities or have no job at all because of fear. The closer a person falls along the avoidant end of the continuum, the more time and the more reinforcement it takes to get better. But let me be rational with you and reassure you. We have seen many avoidant people make substantial progress and overcome social anxiety. So no matter where you fall along the continuum, you can make progress against social anxiety and you can overcome it. It's being persistent in learning and doing the therapy that makes all the difference in the world. Overcoming social anxiety is a process that takes persistence and patience. But as you get better, your life changes completely. Now we need to discuss the brain and how anxiety affects it. We'll look at our entire physiology and notice what's going on in the body as we feel anxiety and fear. We'll look at the brain's neural pathway systems and the role of the two hormones, adrenaline and cortisol. Later, we will learn how to deal with the problems mentioned so that you gain control of your own physiological processes, your neural pathway systems, and the release of the hormones adrenaline and cortisol into your brain and bloodstream. Please look at the first handout in your book. It's called The Brain. It's a very simple cross-section of the human brain. You downloaded your book in PDF format when you ordered the series. When you print the PDF booklet out, it will be over 300 pages. If you wish, you can order the book from Amazon.com. Notice that the top or gray part of the brain, called the cerebrum, is where our brain processes information, our thinking, planning, remembering, and perceiving. We also call this the cognitive brain. This is where the new strategies, methods, and concepts we learn will be processed so that our brain gradually begins to change and our new habits become automatic. The middle part of the brain, in white, is the mid-region part of the brain and is sometimes referred to as the limbic system area. This region is directly in the center of your brain and sits close to the top of your brainstem or your spinal column. This region of the brain processes emotions and for our purposes can be called the emotional brain. This part of the brain controls all of our emotions, the negative ones such as anxiety, fear, depression, irritation, frustration, and anger, and also the positive emotions such as peace, happiness, humor, enjoyment, contentment, and calmness. Because anxiety is an emotion, we need to reach the emotional brain with the therapy we're doing. Cognitive behavioral therapy does just that, and we will encourage the process further by learning how to emphasize and use our positive emotions, such as peace and calmness, so that we can feel calmness in all situations. As we proceed, we will tap into the emotional brain to allow the therapy we're doing to permanently change our brain circuitry. Since we no longer do lobotomies, thankfully, we have only one way of getting healthy, rational, therapeutic thoughts and feelings down into the emotional brain, and that is through repetition and reinforcement. The more your brain hears, sees, perceives, and is exposed to this rational therapy, the stronger the therapy becomes. The more you gently understand it, and the more it turns into a feeling or positive emotion, the closer we are to eliminating social anxiety from our lives. Now, physiologically, what's going on in the brain when you experience anxiety is that the adrenal glands are releasing the hormones adrenaline and cortisol in excessive amounts. Your adrenal glands react to perceived danger by allowing the flow of adrenaline and cortisol throughout your body to prepare you to face danger. We feel this excessive release of adrenaline and cortisol as anxiety. Any way we can slow down the release of adrenaline and cortisol means we slow down anxiety and we can reduce it. We'll learn several basic strategies to slow down our adrenal glands and prevent them from releasing excessive amounts of these hormones into our bodies and brains. When you use these anti-anxiety strategies, you will be the one in control of the situation. Anxiety will no longer be in control of you. You have slowed anxiety down. You have slowed the release of adrenaline and cortisol, so that anxiety gradually lessens and goes away. We also need a basic understanding of cognitive behavioral therapy and a glimpse into how we'll put it into place. We use a step-by-step approach and apply cognitive strategies to the events that occur in our everyday lives. Literally tens of thousands of studies show that cognitive behavioral therapy is the most effective type of therapy for treating social anxiety. Comprehensive CBT literally changes the brain and makes the things we are learning permanent and automatic. In your handout book, there is a basic explanation of what cognitive behavioral therapy is. Please look that handout over now so that you can understand the basic direction we're going. Dr. Aaron Beck and Dr. Albert Ellis are created with the formulation of what has become known today as CBT. Both men, working independently of each other and trained in Freudian psychoanalytic theory, came to the conclusion that psychoanalysis did not help their patients. Instead, they came up with a rational therapy that has been refined over the past few decades. It is most commonly referred to today as cognitive behavioral therapy. Now, cognitive behavioral therapy is not a cure-all for everything and is not the therapy of choice for all mental health care problems. CBT is the therapy that works best for the anxiety disorders, including social anxiety, and for depression. No other therapy formulation has as rich of a research base or has produced as many reliable journal articles. There's a reason for this, and that is that CBT, when done in the manner explained, literally changes the brain. This can be seen today on the new brain imaging machines. Your brain makes literal, physical changes after undergoing cognitive behavioral treatment for social anxiety disorder. Cognitive behavioral therapy is not a rigid, single strategy that we use to reach a goal. It includes many strategies that overlap and work together with each other. In CBT for social anxiety, for example, we learn not to fight or battle anxiety. Instead, we learn to relax, accept, and handle anxiety gently, in a calm and consistent way. We are always logical and rational. That is the heart of cognitive behavioral therapy. You may have heard references to REBT, or Rational Emotive Behavioral Therapy, which is virtually the same thing as comprehensive CBT. The type of CBT we do includes all these other elements. It's easier and less time-consuming to use the terminology CBT, as it is the most widely used term in books and in the research literature. Cognitive behavioral therapy for social anxiety is easy, gentle, and rational. It will make common sense to you. It is important to realize that what you're doing in this therapy series, both the cognitive and the behavioral therapy, works together, cooperatively, and in combination to help you get better as efficiently and as effectively as possible. A longer and more detailed article on comprehensive cognitive behavioral therapy can be accessed in the online Session 1 materials. In each session, additional therapeutic material will be posted online, so make sure you check in there every week. In order for any therapy to be effective and help you overcome social anxiety, it must be relevant, practical, and useful in your daily life. That is why we will focus on practical, real-world solutions that will make permanent changes in the brain. When I use the word therapy, I'm referring to doing specific things that help us get over social anxiety. Only direct action can help us get better. That is what real therapy is, putting into action all the cognitive strategies we learn. Only direct, systematic, structured action, something we learn or do, changes the brain, decreases our anxiety, and allows us to automatically do the things that will eliminate anxiety from our lives forever. One of the reasons CBT works is that you will be reinforcing to yourself what is rational. To learn anything new, you have to practice it over and over again. So I will be reminding you to reinforce and repeat the cognitive strategies as we go through the series one step at a time. This is what happens when we do the appropriate therapy. We learn new rational habits that change our thinking and belief systems, and we take new actions to reduce the amount of anxiety we feel. Then we reinforce each anti-anxiety strategy by doing it over and over again until all anxiety is gone from the situation. The brain is capable of learning and unlearning things, and we will take advantage of the brain's power as we learn to become more rational with ourselves than we have been in the past. Therapy must be done in the right way for it to work. Look at the next handout in your book. It is called How and When to Practice. This handout explains the most effective way to practice. It is important we get started with therapy in the right manner. So read along with me as I read this handout out loud to you. By using this method of reading along with me, it allows your brain to receive several million more inputs because you are both hearing it and reading it. The sound vibrations from my voice are caught by your ear and processed in an entirely different place in the brain. Physically, what's happening is the brain is receiving information from as many different sources as possible. Visually, orally, and even tactily, when you highlight something you think is important or take notes on it. All this rational information is being processed by the brain in several different ways. This makes it more likely our progress will be stronger, smoother, quicker, and more effective. How and when to practice. 1. It's important that you become familiar with the strategies you're learning before you start to use them in real-life situations. Therefore, when a strategy or method is being learned and is new to you, it's always best to practice it when you're feeling relatively calm and when you're alone by yourself to prevent any kind of self-consciousness. We suggest at least 30 minutes a day of reading the relevant handouts over to yourself to give them a chance to be learned by your brain. 2. The therapy you're doing does not need to be beat into the ground the first week. Take a determined yet gentle approach to it. 30 minutes a day, which can be split up if needed, is necessary but adequate. You get better results by doing therapy in the morning when your brain is fresh and reinforcing the therapy throughout the day at breaks, lunch, or when you get home. Later, we'll talk about how you can reinforce the therapy while you're at work or at school without anyone else even knowing what you're doing. I will give you directions about what to do during the week after every session. 3. Reading over the handouts out loud to yourself every day is the best way to keep reminding your brain what you're doing. This, of course, allows the therapy to sink into your brain a little more deeply each time. When your brain reads the messages, and then your ears take them in and send them to different places in the brain, you are hitting tens of millions of more brain cells. Reading the handouts out loud to yourself allows progress to happen faster because you're using more neurons in your brain by doing it this way. 4. Cognitive behavioral therapy works best for anxiety disorders. Research and clinical experience alike consistently indicate that comprehensive cognitive behavioral therapy for social anxiety is life-changing. Repetition and persistence with the methods and strategies that make permanent changes in the brain helps us overcome social anxiety. 5. If we want a permanent change in the brain, and we do, we must practice and be persistent. No one changes habits, thoughts, or beliefs overnight. Overcoming social anxiety is a process that takes patience and time to occur. We must do therapy in the way the human brain processes our words and deeds. We can't force the brain to believe things it hasn't had the time to process adequately. Our actions must correlate with how the brain works physiologically, so that it has a permanent effect on our lives. 6. Contrary to popular thought, medication does not permanently change brain chemistry. It may help temporarily if the medication calms you down and helps you do the cognitive behavioral therapy. But the drug is not curing you. The only way to permanently change neural pathways in the brain is by doing active cognitive behavioral therapy so that your brain thinks, believes, and feels differently. 7. Do the therapy when you're calm and relaxed. Your brain takes in the strategies better when you're relaxed and calm. If you're agitated and anxious, the brain is not going to focus on the therapy you might try to do. It is important to be relaxed first before you do the therapy. So if you're feeling anxious, depressed, agitated, or any other negative emotion, burn off that excessive adrenaline and cortisol by A. exercising for 30 minutes. B. singing along to your favorite positive music. C. talking to a friend who is positive and supports you. D. relaxing, meditating, or listening to peaceful music or sounds. E. anything at all that helps you calm down and relax so that you can be relatively calm and peaceful during your 30-minute-a-day therapy time. It takes constant repetition before your brain starts automatically using these strategies. The only way your brain is going to be able to use these anti-anxiety strategies is if you consistently and persistently drop these methods into your brain over and over again for the entire course of therapy. None of the therapy we work on is going to be stressful or difficult to do. People find the most difficulty with just doing it every day. But your brain needs repetition and reinforcement to create these new habits. Many times going over the therapy every day is the hardest part of the whole process. We have to be consistent with the therapy because there's just no other way of changing the brain except by creating new habits that we use until they become automatic. The idea is to gently rehearse and repeat the anti-anxiety methods and strategies so many times that you couldn't forget them even if you tried. This is the end of the introduction to the series and should give you a general idea of the entire process of getting better. The most important thing at this point is an understanding why it is so vital to your progress that you stay consistent by practicing 30 minutes a day in the way that is described in the How and When to Practice handout. As we start session 2, everything from here on out is direct cognitive behavioral therapy. This will involve listening to the audio portion of the therapy at least once so you understand it fully, and then doing what we talked about in that session. I will give you directions at the end of each session so that you'll know what to practice on during that week. These instructions for each session will be in the online session material, so you can check back and refer to what you need to do as many times as possible. There is no cognitive behavioral therapy in session 1, so once you have listened to all the explanations and understand them, please feel free to go into session 2. In session 2, we learn the foundational concepts that help us reduce and control anxiety. Notice you have the other parts of the program available to help you too. There are video sessions in which I emphasize key therapy points, extra handouts that will be helpful, and therapy put to music, as well as questions and answers for each specific session. Look around in the Session 2 online materials, and you'll find additional help in understanding what we'll be learning in Session 2. Please give yourself a week's time with the material in each session so you can repeat and reinforce it daily, and so that your brain has the time to calmly process and learn it before moving on. This is the end of session 1.